Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of What the Hell? And what we're going to talk about this week is something that I'm fascinated with, cold cases. Police departments have so many of these, and the LAPD has a cold case unit in the Valley Division, and that's who you're going to hear from today. Let's meet our guest.
My name is Kenneth White. I'm the officer in charge of the Unsolved Cold Case Unit, Valley Bureau Homicide.
I'm Detective Santana with the Los Angeles Police Department. I work cold case.
First name is Mario.
Mario.
Yeah. I'm Detective Rachel Evans, and I also work cold case and with the LAPD.
You know, I find cold case investigation fascinating. It's just like, you got to love jigsaw puzzles, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, what? How do you describe what you do to people? I mean, we all kind of know what cold case is, but how do you describe it to your friends when they ask you what you do?
Well, I think you just touched on the iceberg. It is a cold case. It's a jigsaw puzzle, and it's having the opportunity to put pieces together to get to the ultimate end of getting a criminal conviction, a filing, identifying the suspect. So they're very difficult. They're cold for a reason. It takes a lot of research. It takes a lot of technology. We use DNA, fingerprint analyses, and putting your leather to the pavement and interviewing people.
But the difference now is that years ago, like let's say 1956, when a woman named Barbara Jean Jepson was murdered, ostensibly, one suspect was her husband, but he's the one that called in and said, I found my wife dead. But it became a cold case. Now, 60 years later, you're looking at it again. Back then, there were no smartphones. Back then, there was no social media. It was just ask questions, take pictures, and try to figure it all out, right? And today, is it easier?
The tools that we have now, it makes it helpful. It's advantageous. But it's not necessarily easier. It's still difficult.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, cold cases are cold, as I mentioned earlier, for a reason. And it's a good opportunity when you have a cold case to get fresh eyes on that case. Maybe a fingerprint wasn't analyzed at the time. 10, 20 years ago, our fingerprint analyses wasn't as good, so it's improved. So that's helpful. But at the same time, I think at the end of the day, when you have jurors and you're in trial, people want to hear that this person did it or that person did it. So phone analyses, fingerprint analyses, that's helpful. We need that type of information. But at the same time, we've got to put our leather to the pavement and speak to people and witnesses.
So we talked about the Jepson case, Rachel. Fill us in on that.
So Barbara Jean Jepson was a four-month pregnant woman, 18 years old, like 100 pounds. She was super little. And then she was found dead in her bedroom, raped and murdered and stabbed with a knife. So her husband came home from work and found his wife, which I imagine is pretty traumatic.
Oh, yeah. But was he considered a suspect at some point?
Of course.
The husband or the boyfriend always is until you rule them out, right?
Right, correct.
Right. And so it just went nowhere, Mario, and became cold and sat on the shelf?
Sat on the shelf until somebody calls in. I'm like all cases when somebody calls in, but it was a detective decided to go through some archives and saw it and then pulled it out and saw that there was potential for DNA and looked at it. Rachel read it and read over it and just caught on real quick and had some great ideas and ran with it and we're making great progress on the case.
I know there's some things you can't talk about because these are active cases. So, yeah, feel free if I ask you a question to tell me that that's not something you're comfortable talking about at this point in time. Maybe someday you will be able to. But do you think you know who did this?
Absolutely.
And tell me about that and why you feel pretty certain about it.
Well, I don't know that
I heard the word absolutely. That's why I'm.
I do think I know who it is, but I can't really talk about why I know that because we are in the middle of kind of talking to those people who might be familiar with that person.
And that's now the legwork on the case. You've been able to do something with DNA. You've been able to do something with social media. Now you're back to what they did in 1956.
Right.
And going through the motions. Heise case. Can you tell me about the Heise case?
Well, that was a case from 1978, and it occurred in Canoga Park in the San Fernando Valley, and we work Valley Bureau Homicide. So that case, family members had called, and not only that, there was also some retired detectives that called and asked us to look into it because that's one of those cases that haunts detectives' memories. And coincidentally, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and I remember seeing the headlines in the news. So that case even affected myself as a child. So got a phone call from the family and some detectives. We opened it up, and we started looking into it and started making progress on that case. So it's one of the circumstances, I think, on cold cases that I know there's DNA and things like that, but witnesses. When a murder happens, there's a lot of reluctance. There's reluctance to talk to the police, not trust the police, and afraid of some consequences that may happen. You know, when people are younger and then they get older, they realize, hey, maybe those consequences aren't as real as I thought they were, and they're more apt to talk to us. So even on cases that don't have DNA, we'll open them up, and we'll see that maybe we'll read over the statements, and we'll see that, okay, maybe this person, just by reading it, you know what, it seems like this person didn't want to say everything. So we'll go out there, even though there's no DNA to connect anybody, we'll go there and we'll re-interview witnesses to see if, in fact, maybe there's more to the story than what they initially said.
It's always interesting about TV shows. They always manage to solve the case in an hour.
They make it very simple.
They do.
But that's not the reality at all.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's right. Ken, you know, these techniques we talk about, they're getting better and better even as we speak. DNA is going through changes right now.
Absolutely. It seems as though they're improving every year. And the amounts of DNA now that can be tested get smaller and smaller every year, which is definitely beneficial to us.
Well, it's important because if you just have a hair.
Absolutely.
Or something like that. You need something to be able to determine what that hair is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do people call your office and say, you know, that case that happened 25 years ago, I happen to know something about
yes,
that?
Yes, they do all the time. That's what kind of opens up our cases sometimes. We'll get calls like that all the time, and we interview them, and then we open them back up and bring them back in the forefront and look at them again.
How many cases, say, if you had 10 of those kinds of calls, how many might get resolved just through a phone call like that, maybe 50%, 20%?
I don't know. What do you think, Mario?
That's a tough number, only because there's only four of us.
Oh, is that right?
There's only four of us working cold cases in Valley Bureau Homicide. And so we have to prioritize what the information is, the type of case it is, and things that maybe we can get more mileage out of the information. So we'll gather the information. Sometimes we'll put it aside and we'll keep it in mind, and then we'll move on. For example, Jepson. It's an old case, but it's something that we think we're going to have a resolution relatively quick. So it's the numbers. We get calls. We get a lot of calls like that. But the resolution, it's hard to get the time to be able to get that number.
Let me talk about one other case here, George Martinez. Can you fill me in on that? Because this was one that worked. This is one where you solved it, a cold case.
That was we had some video of the location that occurred in Van Nuys. And we had some social media, so it was a social media that was popping up, and then we were able to get those photos.
What in social media was popping up?
It was pictures and videos on Facebook that of the location of the scene and the persons that were involved in the murder. Mm-hmm. So we used that, and we used those photos, but then it gets back to what Detective Ken White was saying, was that putting our leather in the streets, you know, putting them down and going out there and look for witnesses and talking to them. And then we got the identification through witnesses because of the time frame, the delay, because at that time when the incident happened, witnesses left. They didn't want to talk to the police. And it was, you know, 4 years later they decided, okay, you know, I feel comfortable talking about it now, and I'll tell you what I know.
Those pictures you talked about, one of them shows two people. They're highlighted, and they're not that clear to me. And then you have one that shows a muzzle flash. So you're actually seeing the shooting occurring.
Yes.
But, you know, unless it's, you know, a great 1080 pixel something or another smartphone, a lot of these pictures are pretty hard to figure out, right?
Well, that's what makes Detective Santana and Evans very successful and great investigators, is because they take a piece of the puzzle and they have to figure it out. So, yeah, they have a grainy image. So do we have DNA? Do we have fingerprints? Were there witnesses that weren't spoken to, you know, 10 years ago? Where were they located, or where were they at that time of the murder? So all these factors come into play, which makes it very important, and that's how we can solve cases.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you do. I think it's really pretty remarkable, and when you're able to solve cases 5 or 6 or 7 decades later and bring closure to a family, that's something. Mm-hmm. That's really something. I'm sure that's very gratifying when that can occur.
Totally. I think that's my favorite part of the job, is being able to knock on that door and say, hey, we found them, so that they can move on in peace.
Yeah.
I think one of the things for me is that I've had a family member murdered. So it goes back to, you know, what if this was my mother in the Heist case, or what if this was my brother on George Martinez, or what if it was my sister on Jepson? What would I do? And that's why it kind of hits home. All these cases hit home for me, so I want to go ahead and follow these cases all the way through. I think I can see Rachel. She works with a lot of passion, and she pushes really hard, and I think all of us do.
So just to even the playing field, Ken said nice things about you two. Can you say anything nice about him?
That's our boss. So
I mean, what the hell, right?
He's our boss. He's the best boss ever.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
Well, he sets the tone.
He sets the tone?
He goes out. I mean, you know, he's worked a lot of different areas, and he brings a lot of expertise, and he's worked a lot of gang cases, sophisticated cases. So he has expectations. He raises the level, and we have to go and meet it or try to go above that. So, you know, that's...
He's blushing.
Or I'm going to put that raise in for you now.
Very good. What's the bottom line? Do you want to tell people what number they can call if they have information? Do you want to tell people how they can reach you if they have information? Do you want to just ask people to help you?
Yeah, I mean, talk to us about it. That's the best way, is to help these families move on, is to talk to us. Let us know what's going on so that we can follow those leads and put those issues to rest.
Thanks to those detectives. Now I want to bring in one more, and the author of a new book, to talk about another cold case that was solved. Introduce yourselves, guys.
I'm Detective Mark Martinez, assigned to Operations Valley Bureau Homicide, LAPD.
Matthew McGough. I'm a journalist and author of The Lazarus Files, a cold case investigation, which is a murder case that Detective Martinez was involved in solving.
That's what's awesome about this part of the podcast, is that we've got the detective that worked on the case, and we have the author that wrote a book, and, you know, you get two kind of interesting perspectives here. So let's start with Matthew this time. And why don't you sort of give us a lay of the land on this case, the Lazarus case, what happened, how you got involved in it. Go ahead.
The case involves the murder of a newlywed hospital nurse, a woman named Sherry Rasmussen, who was brutally killed in 1986, and at the time, LAPD detectives believed that it was a burglary that had gone wrong. There was no DNA testing in 1986, and fast forward about 23 years, a lot of scientific advances and evidence in the case was tested and revealed that it was a female suspect. And so in February 2009, Detective Martinez and three of his colleagues in the Van Nuys Homicide Unit reopened the case and began looking at a female suspects, and quickly identified an LAPD detective, Stephanie Lazarus, as having been an ex-girlfriend of the victim's husband.
Your book is called The Lazarus Files, and you spent, what, about 10 years putting this together?
It took about 10 years from start to finish, yeah. It's a complicated story. And so, yeah, it took some time to collect all the puzzle pieces and put them in order.
it's a complicated story. It was also a complicated cold case. And that's where you came in, because this was a case that they couldn't figure out at first, right?
That's correct.
Tell me about what your involvement was, how it all worked.
Well, in the beginning of 2009, the book, the murder book, came back to us from Robbery Homicide Division.
And understanding a murder book isn't like what Matt writes, but it's like a notebook with pictures and reports and forms and that kind of thing in it?
It's a three-ring, big three-ring binder. And,
got it.
Filled with sections of information, crime scene photos, investigator notes. And when it came back to us, Detective Nuttall was actually the first one to read the book, and we kind of tossed it around in the office a little bit about the case. And at this point, we weren't really focusing on Lazarus. We didn't even know she was even involved at the time. But as we read into the case a little more, we identified who she was through Sherry Rasmussen's husband at the time of her death, John Rutan, who she was. And at that point, we took steps to eliminate all the suspects that we thought might have wanted Sherry dead. There were a couple of co-workers that she had beef with at work, and those individuals were eliminated. But I got to take you back before we got the case. There was a bite mark. When she was murdered, she had a bite mark on one of her arms, and they swabbed it at the time. Of course, they had no DNA back in 86. So fast forward to the early 2000s, and it was tested, and it came back to a female. When we got the case, it already had been profiled as a female profile. So, looking back at it, you know, we kind of thought, okay, well, maybe it was a male-female tandem burglary, which is very unique, you know, because in my experience on the job, females don't do burglaries. You know, it's usually guys, males. But as the case progressed, we started eliminating other individuals in the case. We focused on Stephanie Lazarus, and just things kind of just built up and ended up being her.
That's got to be difficult.
It was.
One of your own.
It was. But at the end of the day, you go where the case takes you, and a murderer is a murderer, no matter what you put on, what kind of uniform they put on, or what kind of suit they wear.
How did that change things at the LAPD? I mean, it must have had some consequence.
You know, I think that that our investigation was no different than anything else that had been played out prior years as far as DNA evidence cases. I don't think it changed the landscape or the investigations per se. I think that what we learned is that these types of cases have to be handled with kid gloves, and at times they have to be done with the utmost secrecy because of the leaks that we have sometimes in our department. You know, things leak out to this press, and so I think that we learn from that in that aspect. But I learned as an investigator a lot of things in that case. You know,
like what?
You can't take things for granted. Look at the case at face value, and you can probably surmise that the investigators back in 86, they did a good job investigating what they thought were suspects or what direction they were going, and you could probably follow that, you know. You could look at it as tunnel vision or whatever you think it is as an investigator, but as time goes on and you start examining everything and it takes you a different way, then that's where you go with the case.
Matt, you know, you and I talked earlier about changes, improvements in technology, DNA, and everything else. What's your observation after hearing the detective and all the years of research you did on this case?
I think good detective work is timeless in a way, and the detectives who I've gotten to know who I respect the most are the ones who were persistent, gifted interviewers.
Dogging the case.
Yeah, old-fashioned plumbing for answers through human intelligence, basically. That's a constant, and it remains a constant today. But the tools that detectives have beyond that are powerful and evolving all the time. So DNA is not a constant thing. The science is improving. And at this moment, we're actually in a sort of another transition point where in the early 2000s, as Detective Martinez said, DNA was becoming established enough that like the LAPD started a cold case unit to exploit DNA. You know, fast forward 17, 18 years to today, we have DNA, but we also have genealogy. That's something that is just emerging in the last couple of years with the Golden State Killer and other cases. And so there's new opportunities today to go back and look at old cases and hopefully get answers for families because, like I said in the TV segment we taped earlier, there's still thousands of unsolved murders in the last 30, 40 years. And, you know, each one of those cases deserves a look.
I thought it was interesting that you accidentally tripped into this case. Tell that story.
Yeah, I had initially planned to write a book about art theft. And in 2008, I interviewed the LAPD's art theft detectives, one of whom was Stephanie Lazarus. Didn't have any indication at the time that she might have been hiding a terrible secret. And it was a year later that she was arrested. But it was because I had this chance encounter with her that I was on the story from day one.
So, were you shocked?
Stunned. Yeah. Why would I have any...
Yeah, I mean, she seemed like just your average Stephanie, right?
She was very cordial. She was fairly knowledgeable about, you know, her beat, which was art theft, kind of an unusual, interesting beat. I remember, you know, sitting with her. She gave me her business card. We talked baseball. It was, you know, it was a normal
baseball because you have a background
part of my background. But
right.
Yeah, it wasn't a remarkable interview, except in hindsight. In hindsight, it's shocking that she would take a risk of sitting down with a journalist kind of secret.
Do you think that somehow that was a way to be able to say, I couldn't possibly be involved, you know, to sort of play out a role?
Yeah, I can't fully get inside Stephanie's head and what she was thinking, but over the course of her career, there's definitely a pattern where she was sort of hiding in plain sight. And I wasn't the only reporter who she granted an interview to. She did TV spots and radio spots and profiles in LA Weekly and so on and so forth. So, she stayed put until the day that she was arrested.
One of the things that Matt just said I thought was kind of interesting, he said she was hiding in plain sight. Do you find that often, that your suspect is hiding in plain sight?
Yes. Yes, and, you know, you have other cases where, apart from the Lazarus case, where you know who the suspect is, and he's commingling with even family members, or he still might be going on with his life, and he might get arrested a couple more times, and he's right there in front of us. But you might just not have the evidence to take him to trial.
Wow.
But that's what I find so interesting about how you guys work is with cold cases. You know, with a fresh case, you want to get the guy off the street before he commits another case, commits another crime. With a cold case, the suspect is the last person you speak to. That's and right. you want to get all the information together, and so you go to them when you're ready, whether they're hiding in plain sight or in the wind or whatever. That's something that I find interesting
about how
you guys work.
One of the things Rachel Evans said earlier in this podcast was that people will call in tips. It might be like, hello, that case that happened 25 years ago, I got some information on that I want to tell you about. And sometimes that's how you get down on these cases, that somebody calls in after years and years and years and says, hey, I know something.
That happens a lot. It happens a lot. And some, and unfortunately, most of those tips are, they've already been looked at before in prior years, or they're not valid tips, or the person that they're pointing at is not even involved in the case. And we get lucky every now and then. You know, and most of the calls, unfortunately, we get is family members saying, what are you doing with my loved one's case?
You know, here's a chance to speak out to anybody who's listening and ask for a helping hand if you want to.
I would I really don't want to state particular cases, but
no.
But I work the unsolved case unit in Valley Bureau. If you have a case or where your loved one was murdered and you have new and pertinent information on the case that would lead to more leads and would help in the apprehension of a suspect, you can reach me at Van Nuys Station. I'm Detective Martinez.
Good to know. Write it down, folks. And Matt, any final thoughts?
I guess my two cents would be that, you know, there's a lot of these cold cases and there's limited resources within the department. And I know that there's a lot of competition for resources, but I'd encourage the LAPD to make sure that these cold case units are staffed up and
well-resourced,
that they have the lab resources that they need. I know the LAPD had a cold case unit down at RHD that is down to two detectives now, and I think both those detectives are assigned to Durst. They're not picking up new cases. So
it seems like such an important thing to give families closure, to close the murder book on a case, and to be able to say that's over.
Yeah, whether you're able to close the case or not, the examination and the search is what's crucial and has to continue.
Remind me about your book, Lazarus Files.
Yes, it's out now, and it's the complete story of Sherry Rasmussen's murder and how Stephanie Lazarus got away with it for many years.
Well, my thanks to all of those detectives and to Matt McGough. I think this was fascinating, and I got to tell you, I really do think that those who work in cold case investigations have a pretty tough job, and I think a pretty admirable one. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.